Time to get busy.
Like we always do about this time.
Jonathan Hood.
Offside!
On ESPN 1000.
A lot of this is behind the scenes or under the hood.
He was going the right way! Cohen, all the way! Touchdown, Chicago!
There won't be some Rams renaissance with this Bears team. That's just not happening. Even with Mitch Trubisky, you may have the jersey, but you don't know what that guy really is.
To market it, to answer. Come on!
Oh, bang, 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 sriracha!
Joseph Sikora.
I think I saw you in a commercial with Michael Jordan. Were you with Jordan in
the
commercial?
Michael Jordan, yeah.
What was your line in that commercial?
It is Michael Jordan.
That's all you had.
It's time to just look under the hood. No stone should be unturned. I don't even know what that means.
A Louisiana couple is accused of attempting to rob an Uber driver.
Under the hood.
That the woman distracted by being topless.
With Jonathan Hood.
I got an engine underneath my hood.
Oh, it's a topless woman. Oh, I'm totally distracted now.
Weeknights on ESPN 1000.
What's up, and welcome in. You're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Open phone lines for you, 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is the telephone number. Hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com, tweet Jay Hood. On Instagram, IG Jay Hood, as we broadcast live from our First Midwest Bank Studios.
Strong, trusted, First Midwest Bank.
We'll hear from Howard Griffith from the Big Ten Network coming up in about 5 minutes right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Glad that you're in today. It is meat and cheese week as the Bears get ready to take on the Packers. Mentioned at the top, there's a lot of stuff going on today. Well, it's a packed show. We just talked to Jesse about the Cubs and what's going on there. The White Sox, by the way, don't have any news just as of yet, but I know that they're looking to try to find their John Lester. What I mean by that is that the White Sox are looking to be able to get that big fish from a pitching standpoint at some point. I've been saying for years, in order to jumpstart this rebuild for the White Sox, they need their John Lester, just like John Lester was able to jumpstart the Cubs in their run to the World Series. Rick Hahn with his thoughts moments ago in Phoenix at the winter meetings.
We've had a lot of productive conversations over the last couple of days. Today was probably a little more focused on conversations with other clubs than free agents, but we remain active and in tune and on both fronts. As much, and this is sort of the fan side of me talking more than anything, or the kid who grew up excited by the winter meetings every year. Certainly would love to get stuff done here. We've been known to get stuff done at the winter meetings again. We've also had some quiet winter meetings along the way ourselves. But there is simply no urgency to get anything done here. We'd love to knock off everything on our list while we're all together here. But that's no different than how we were approaching our business last week or the week before, or the week before Thanksgiving when we signed Yasmani. Again, we'll remain engaged in conversations in terms of predicting whether something happens. It's really sort of impossible to say until we get right on that goal line, which we're not at just yet.
No urgency. Just put our feet up. We're fine. You got ground doll. Is that all you're going to do? That's not good enough. That's one line of that minute six that I would have left out. I wouldn't have said that we are not he said it doesn't matter if we get anything done or not. Like, it's not no sense of urgency to get anything done now. I think, you know, Rick's going to have to learn what sound bites mean and speaking in sound bites. He's going to have to learn how to cut that minute six to about 35 seconds and say what you got to say through that. A little bit too much transparency. And if we don't get anything done here in Phoenix, it's okay. Sox fans don't want to hear that because Sox fans have to decide whether or not they're going to get down on season tickets or how many tickets they're going to buy here in the offseason. You know, now, if you're a Sox fan, you're like, well, you know, if that's all you're going to do, then I'll hold my money back until whenever, right? Can't do that. got to be able to be more, you don't have to be so forthcoming. I mean, you at least you want to have the appearance that you're trying. You know, I mean, appreciate the transparency, but also that's probably not good for business. That's just a thought there. Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. As a White Sox fan, I'm hoping that they are not taking a laid-back approach and just waiting for the big haul to come to them, because that's not great. As I mentioned, meat and cheese week for the Bears and the Packers is always big. Matt Nagy got a chance to speak to the media and talked a little bit about the offense. And Mitch Trubisky, what's going well with the offense coming off the victory against Dallas?
You know, you're always trying to put your guys in the best position possible. As coaches, you're always trying to design the best plays as possible to put them in a situation to execute it. When you're not executing and when you're not calling the right plays, it can crumble and it can just, you know, it can snowball. We got to that point to where it just, so many three and outs. I go back to our first game against these guys, and the amount of third and longs that we had in that game is over the top. So what does that equate to? Well, it equates to first and second down. And you guys know, we've been saying it all year long. When you're good on first and second down and you stay in third and manageable, you have a shot. It's hard in the NFL to live in third and eight plus. So when you're going three and out, or when you're going third and 10, third and nine, you're punting the ball a lot, and you can't get in a rhythm as a player and as a play caller. So we've been staying away from that. We've been trying to do our best to stay away from penalties, and I think you're seeing the production of or you're seeing us produce now because of that.
Matt, regarding Aaron Rodgers,
Horsted and Holtz, more because of improved play at the position, or is that part of the rhythm too?
No, I wouldn't say it's a little bit of rhythm. I mean, they're so new to us as coaches, not knowing exactly what their strengths and weaknesses are. We have an idea of it, but I just think the other thing too is you had two other guys in Trey and Adam that were a little bit beat up, a little bit hurt physically, so they weren't 100%. You have two other guys now that are coming in here that are 100%, and they have different styles, they have different types of talent. So we're trying to figure out the best way to use them, and I want to credit them because especially J.P. Holtz. Here's a kid that's come in here, and he's done everything that we've asked, and he just he's helped us out at that quote-unquote Y position.
Thoughts there from Matt Nagy, the head coach for the Chicago Bears. You're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Yeah, I mean, when you come off that victory against Dallas, yeah, you know, I mean, everything looks good offensively. I can't knock it because the utilization of the tight end, running the football, Mitch moving out of the pocket, those things are something that you want to see in September. Now you're seeing it here in early December. Now, the next few games will tell a great story than I could ever tell about what Trubisky is and is not. It's a big decision for Ryan Pace and the Bears as far as the future for Mitch Trubisky, because it's one solid game, one terrific game out of a lot of other games that could have been a lot better. And it shouldn't have taken this long for us to be able to see a game like we saw from Trubisky, but we did. One other thing, too, that stood out in the press conference today, and that is what we talked about to start with. You know, on an NFL Sunday with no Bears, it was easy for me to be able to sit back, watch all the NFL games and watch these prolific offenses and watch offenses for 2019 and beyond versus an offense sometimes that's kind of stuck in the mid, you know, the early 2000s sometimes as far as relying on the run game, but yet can't get the ball down the field. We saw that a lot from the Bears a lot this season. Some thoughts from Nagy as far as watching other good offenses while the Bears were off.
Assuming you watched some football yesterday, I was curious what you thought. What goes through your mind when you see some of these offenses, Kansas City, New Orleans, San Francisco, that are where you want to be? And with all the focus that's been on your offense, what's the emotion you feel when you watch, when you see kind of finished products like
that? Yeah, no, I for me, it's you like seeing great offensive football. And you know, for our offense, I just appreciate the way that our guys have continued to just fight through this year and try to figure out where we're at. I do feel a lot better with where we're at right now as an offense. So that part, that's good. And that's a credit to our guys. So every week's a little bit different. And we're not focused on how they're doing or what they're doing. We're focused on us. And that's the ultimate goal is to be able to produce a lot of points so we can help our team win.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app, we turn to a two-time Super Bowl champion. We turn to an analyst for the Big Ten Network. It is Chicago's own Howard Griffith. He joins me, Jonathan Hood, right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app as we talk college football. Howard, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Hoodie, man, how are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm over Saturday. I feel great.
What do you mean you're over Saturday? You feel great. What's going on? Talk to me.
Well, you understand what happened with LSU.
You mean Georgia not being number four really has you kind of in a some sort of mood?
No, I'm fine with it. You know why? Because I've taken the Howard Griffith approach of being able to analyze it properly. When you are pretty much, you can't move the offense, right? When you're pretty pedestrian offensively anyway, and you don't have the strong running game as you once did, you know you're going to have a problem when you take on a juggernaut like LSU. So you have to be a realist in big games like that, right?
You have to be. And really for me, when I watch Georgia beat Notre Dame, as you know, I have a vested interest in Notre Dame.
Uh-huh.
But when I watched them play that game, I said, this Georgia team is not the Georgia team that people are trying to hype up. Because I know where Notre Dame is, and they're not in that upper echelon of elite teams right now. And when they had a chance, and they were winning this game, had a chance to come back, I'm like, Georgia's not explosive enough to take advantage. So, you know, this kind of been brewing all year for Georgia, but it's still a good football team. But I think that Kirby is a lot like Nick Saban was 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Really conservative, can make big plays if the run game is working and you can use play action. But if it's not, big problem.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened, and that the result on Saturday, Howard, was not a surprise to me. When you look that way offensively, the Georgia Bears, as I call them, with Joe Flacco. I'm sorry,
the quarterback. Stop it.
But here's the thing, though. It was already in my phone on my calendar. January 1, block it out, because that's where Georgia usually is. New Year's Day, you can always find a Georgia Bulldog taking on somebody. So
okay,
so they take on Baylor coming up.
All right, so let me ask you this.
Yes.
So where do you stand on Justin Fields? Being a Georgia fan, where do you stand?
Well, Kirby Smart seems like he's behind the times, and then this happens when you have a defensive coordinator or a defensive guy as your head coach. If you can't see where offenses are going in college and the pros, and don't understand that there is a different gear to Justin Fields' game that you could have been utilized, you know, you get what you get. And this is what happened. If Fields is in that spot, I'm not saying the offense is extremely better. You're still not getting past LSU, but at least now you have a different weapon at quarterback in that spot. You know, it's different.
Yeah, here's what I would say. It is, as good as Justin Fields is, the system was not utilizing his skill set. His skill set was trying to have him as another Fromm, and that's not his game.
Mm-hmm.
That's not his game. But again, that's that Alabama system as far as being conservative, and it took Nick Saban a long time to get to where he is right now, where he's been for the last 3 years. Hopefully Kirby Smart will now shift gears and get involved in that, because he's doing everything else right as far as recruiting, as far as the atmosphere at the games. He needs to bring that offense to the next level, and he can do that with the mobile quarterbacks that you're seeing that are out there having a great deal of success right now.
Howard Griffin from the Big Ten Network with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Howard, as you take a look at the four that came out, I had no problem with the four at all. I think it's the easiest the committee's ever had as far as picking their four. So yeah. Where do you place Ohio State's chances to win the championship with the other three?
I think they're still very good. Listen, I know the narrative has been written for the last week, 2 weeks, that nobody wants to see Clemson. And I know they're dynamic. They've really taken off, particularly like the last 5 or 6 games. You know, the offense is really clicking. But at the end of the day, when you're in this 14 playoff, you have to be able to score points. LSU can do that. LSU, obviously Ohio State can do that. So you've got the teams that are involved that can do it. The only one that may not be able to score points at the clip that the others is Oklahoma. And Oklahoma is still a really good team, but I think defensively the score is still going to be a little bit higher with those guys in it, because Ohio State to me is still the most complete team. But I do understand having LSU involved and what they did to Georgia, you know, kind of gave them the edge at the end of the day. But this Clemson team, they're still going to be hard out. They're going to be hard out because they've got one of the better quarterbacks in all of college football, particularly lately. And, you know, he can make the throws. He has the weapons and the running back, ATN, with the receivers outside. So it's going to be a fun – it's going to be a really good, I think, 14 playoff with a lot of points are going to be scored.
I just need to know if Oklahoma – boy, I know they can score, Howard.
Yeah.
And that last game, okay, your defense stiffened. And you need that in a big game, okay? So I appreciate that. But we know the narrative on Oklahoma because they made it themselves. Strong offensively, not as good defensively, but got, I thought, somewhat better this year. This is why I'm intrigued.
They did get better, but it really doesn't – and it matters. Defense does matter, but historically, you know, since the 14 playoffs, since the inception, it's really been about offense, and that's what college football is right now. So you can have a quote-unquote great defense, and you look at Ohio State, arguably may have the best defensive player in all of college football or the best player when you look at Chase Young, and then all of a sudden you look at Jeff Okuda that's playing corner for them as well. But in the playoffs, it's about scoring points. And kind of like we've seen with the NFL, if you can't manufacture points, you're going to have issues as a team. It doesn't matter. These teams, the defenses are going to have to be able to hold teams to field goals, get a turnover, make teams, you know, force a 10, 12, 15 play drive. Those are the things that are going to win when you get to this 14 playoff, because it's really all about offense and who's not going to turn the football over.
I'm wondering your thoughts on the biggest surprise in the Big Ten this year for you.
Wow. Well, I
Got a lot of candidates, Howard.
So you look, Minnesota could be in that category. Indiana could be in that category. Illinois, if they had not stumbled versus Northwestern, is in that category. There's some great stories out there, but I really like the matchup with P.J. Fleck and Auburn, because this is a team with Tanner Morgan. He's got, you know, 2,000-yard receivers that are going to play on Sunday. There's really three of them. Their top three receivers will all play on Sunday. This is going to be a little bit of a challenge for Auburn, and the psychology of it is the Auburn players aren't going to believe that any team named Minnesota can possibly compete with them. So the next thing you know, Minnesota's going to show up. Tanner Morgan's going to drop back in the pocket. A guy who wasn't even a starting quarterback in spring ball, nor was he the starter when camp opened. He wasn't named a starter until the guy he was competing against had an injury. So they have been playing really, really well. And PJ's done a great job. But so I think that PJ Fleck and the Minnesota Gophers are probably, you know, the best story that's happened in the Big Ten this year, amongst a lot of great stories and storylines.
Bulls lose again, this time to Toronto. We'll break that game down coming up in the next half hour right here on Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Let me go through some games for you, Howard. You know, before I go through these games, I got to say this because it's on my heart again. I just, in this conversation about the Final Four and trying to figure out who's the top four teams, what's been lost is the value of the bowl game, especially the good bowl games, the top half of the bowl games. Howard, there's still value in going to a bowl game and winning it. It's been so lessened, though, over the last few years about, you know, who's going to be in the Final Four. If you don't make the Final Four, then you're not, you know, then your program failed. Didn't fail. If you have six or more wins and you've had a good season, you deserve to be in a bowl game.
If you got a chance to win 10 games,
yeah,
or 11 games, right? And that's the situation. You know, I'm talking about Minnesota. They're in that situation. You look at Penn State, they're in that situation. The bowl games are still very important. And I think you have to take a dive into programs. because it's another 15 practices that they get an opportunity to go out and continue to, you know, to hone their craft. Really, it's about working the young kids. That's what really these bowl practices are about. And yeah, you know, so maybe the first five or six practices, it's really about the young kids, the, you know, the true freshmen, the redshirt guys getting out there and continuing to work and getting some valuable practice time while you rest your veterans. Then you get your veterans, you know, you allow them to put in a game plan. That's why they're veterans. You know, they've gained all that experience from game time. So it's still important. That's why I think you look at a team like Illinois, it's very important. This bowl season is huge for them. You know, they've got some work to do from a recruiting standpoint because they may have, I think, six commits at this particular point, mm-hmm. and signing day is on the 18th, the first signing day, the biggest signing day right now. So they've got a lot of work to do to catch up in that area, but they're still practicing. They can invite kids to campus and see them going through their practice routine and say, this is how we want to use you. Whereas you look at some other teams that aren't bowl eligible, say a Maryland, then they're like, well, you know, it's kind of, we're just trying to show you what you can do, but they're no longer playing. So I think the bowl, listen, the bowls are great. I know it's a whole lot of them, and I can't keep track of all of them. But to me, if you get an opportunity to play in one, it's incumbent on the coaching staff to really make sure it's a great experience. Because you can, there's so much value that's there that's going to help you down the road with trying to continue to build your program.
Howard, we got a few minutes left, so let me go through just the first thing that comes to your mind when it comes to some of these bowl games. Like, I'll start with, let me scroll down and go to the Rose Bowl, Oregon, Wisconsin. What stands out about that game quickly?
I like that. It's going to be a physical team. Oregon is no longer this finesse team that they used to be. They're a team that wants to win the line of scrimmage and can have the capability of doing that. So I really like that matchup. The matchup to keep an eye on, though, is Michigan-Alabama.
That's marquee right there. That's a marquee matchup.
Here's why, though. How many of the Alabama players are going to play? They're not used to playing in a game like this. They're always in the middle of the playoffs, right? They've got three elite receivers that could be legitimate first-round picks. Are they all going to play? They've got a defensive player who's been banged up all year, Dylan Moses, who's been out. He won't come back, but there are so many players on the Alabama team that are going to be looking toward the National Football League. Are they going to play? And I think that's what's really intriguing about that matchup, outside of whether or not Harbaugh can win a truly big game against a marquee program. And we still have to find that out. Their defense coordinator, Don Brown, I believe is going to be interviewing, if he hasn't already, for the BC job. So there's a lot of things going on both sides of with both teams that we should really keep an eye on.
Two more I'm interested in. The Outback Bowl with Minnesota against Auburn, yep. as well as USC and Iowa in the Holiday Bowl. Yep. Again, these are some good games, Howard.
These are really good games. And let me jump to the Iowa-USC game. USC has some elite receivers as well. St. Brown, Pittman, these are big-time players. They've got a true freshman quarterback that I'm thinking is probably going to be the starter in this one. But they can throw it around. But where they are weak is on the defensive side versus the run. Iowa doesn't do a great job of running, but they've got a true freshman that can run the ball pretty well. And if they can get him going, I think that game's a little more intriguing. But this Iowa team has really struggled all year trying to find that running game. When you think about this, they have probably in worth probably one of the top 10 picks in the draft, mm-hmm. coming up, offensive linemen. So there are some players in all of these bowl games that the Big Ten is involved in. There's some really elite players that are going to be difference makers at the next level.
Howard, I'm glad you spent some time. I think this bowl season is going to be a lot of fun. And as you mentioned, the big time signing day is right around the corner. So that should all be very interesting. As a college football fan, I'm looking forward to these games.
I know you are. Your Georgia team's going to be okay, though. They just got to make a couple tweaks, and they'll be all right.
I ain't worried about your pat on the head. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Howard Griffith for the Big Ten Network with me here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Ah, the Bulls lost in just fantastic fashion again. That winning player, Zach LaVine, getting the job done again. Can't blame the coach on this one.
From your hood to J-hood.
I excel, then prevail. The mic is contacted. I attract clientele.
On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Glad that you are with me. Tomorrow night we have Notre Dame basketball starting at 6. We'll be on about 8:30, 8:45 until 10. We'll have Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday. We'll have Jesse Rogers from San Diego. So shortened show tomorrow, about 8:35, somewhere in there until 10 o'clock after Notre Dame basketball right here on the home of the Irish, ESPN 1000. So it's a final at the United Center as the Bulls lose to the Toronto Raptors 93-92. So that means that the Bulls have lost to the Raptors, lost to the Heat last night, lost to the Warriors on Friday. Last win was against the Grizzlies, 106-99. It was a two-game winning streak between their wins against the Sacramento Kings and the Memphis Grizzlies. And boy, I tell you, this 8-17 team finds new ways to lose ball games. It is just really amazing. And if you, by the way, if you watch the game, or if you're leaving the United Center, any someone real to talk to you about what happened here, I'll be glad to take your phone calls at 312-332-ESPN. Sean, open the phone lines if Bulls fans want to be able to talk here. Because, you know, you can have a value in the team that you watch, players that you watch, and believing that they're going to grow. Out of these, this roster of players, there's one in Zach LaVine that's on this team. And it goes back to the phrase, never confuse activity with accomplishment. Zach LaVine finished with 20 points, 11 rebounds, 6 assists. So 4 assists shy of a triple-double. 34 minutes of play, 6 for 18 from the field, 3 for 10 from 3. Went to the foul line 7 times. But see, no matter the numbers I give you, you have to take a look at where you are late in the game. And you also, as a veteran player like LaVine, have to understand trust. See, the problem with this Bulls team is that there is not enough trust with this Bulls team for the team to be able to buy in and work together. That's the thing that you look at with this Chicago Bulls team. And I'll give you a prime example of that. We talk about trust, right? Okay. Late in the game, an opportunity for the Bulls to win the game. And of course, it's the fourth quarter, and of course, the Bulls are down. But as we take a look at the last 18 seconds of the game, there is Zach LaVine driving from the left side trying to get to the basket. There's a wide open Gafford underneath the basket, wide open. And he's just standing there, and LaVine's still trying to drive on two or three Raptors trying to win the ball game. And he's stuffed right there at the rim. Gafford's wide open. One pass by LaVine, that gives the Bulls the victory because then Gafford has it wide open. Gafford was coming in from the right baseline, right to the basket, waiting. And instead, Zach LaVine wanted to play hero ball and went right to the rim, got stuffed right there, and the ball game is over. Stacey King talked about it on the broadcast, right at the end. He continued to tell us straight what happened there. And the reason why he did is he wanted to show something, that there's a lack of trust when it comes to this Bulls team. That's just one example of it, though. If you've been watching the season and watching this team, it's pretty evident. Hero ball by Zach LaVine. And LaVine, I'm sure, because he said this last year, he said it this year as well, oh, I'd do it again. I'm just doing what I can to help the team win. I got to do it again. I got to put it on my shoulders. But the thing that Zach LaVine and players on this roster don't understand is, if you have a side eye and you have a mistrust in your teammates that's in that same locker room, then you get a result like you had tonight against the Raptors. That was a winnable ball game the way the Bulls were playing, especially in the first quarter, the third quarter, down the stretch, and then this it came down to one play where Zach could have put it in the hands of Gafford. If Gafford misses the layup, he missed the layup, but I doubt it because Gafford is always around the rim. He's always getting the high percentage shots. That was a win for the Bulls. That was taken away because Zach LaVine had to be able to be the guy. Here's the difference between being the guy and being a winner. You can be the guy and fill up the stat sheet and say, you know, and believe me, I've been in that locker room enough, a number of locker rooms, where somebody's given the sheet and they go, he lost, but I got my 20-11, and then puts the paper down. I've been in the locker room plenty of times where the selfish player will look at his numbers. Did I get mine? Yes. I did my job. You didn't do your job. You didn't do your job. And this is why this ball club's 8-17. And I understand it's easy to point at Jim Boylan. Hey, Jim doesn't know what he's doing. I understand as a head coach. He moved 18 inches into Fred Hoiberg's seat, and he's smiling. He's got the chins up and just trying to make it seem like everything's cool. But understand this, is that when you become a head coach, you have got to get that unselfishness out of your locker room or point out the people that are so you can get a better team. This whole approach of, well, as a head coach, I got to be a hard ass to make sure that these guys are right. That, you know, that doesn't work in the league. It doesn't work in the league. You know when it works in the league? When that same coach with that same demeanor wins, Greg Popovich. That's when that happens. This is who I am as a head coach who came from the front office, comes downstairs and goes, well, I'm the head coach. This is how we're going to play. You're going to have some freedom, but also we have to work within a system. Fred, you know, Jim Boylan comes in as an assistant coach 18 inches over to where Fred Hoiberg was sitting, and all of a sudden the team is coming apart. This is what this is. This is what this is. When you do not foster the feeling of team working together, you get results like that. Zach LaVine's not a winning player. The hell out of here with that. Come on. It's the reason why that he was putting up shots in Sacramento. Again, another particular team and city that doesn't have a winning product. Come on, man. You're trying to make Zach LaVine out of something special. He puts up numbers. Yeah, but that's not what it means to win just because you put up numbers. You got to be able to trust one another. Gafford is a kid there that was looking for the lay-in that was an easy basket. No, didn't see him. I got to put my shot up. How often have we seen this from Zach LaVine? Last minute shot, I got to have the ball. I'll put it on my shoulders. Well, you know what? You still have to be able to get Markkanen involved, Carter involved, Satoransky involved, White involved. You know, if it's about team, make sure that your teammates are getting theirs. We talk about the Bulls with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Let me know when Boylan's done talking, because I know that he's at his press conference. I know he's going to make excuses. But just this is just amazing. Because here's what's going to happen. The Bulls are 8-17, but it's not like they're going to be in the mix for a number one pick or number two pick. That's not what's going to happen here. What's going to happen is that they're just going to be good enough to just kind of be in the middle of the lottery. The way that they're playing right now, they won't be a playoff team, even though John Paxson talks about how he wants to be back in the playoffs.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap. And I did tell the players, you know, and you've heard Zach's commented on, you know, he wants to be a playoff team next year. I think our goal next year has to be in the hunt. We want to be in that hunt again. 2 years ago, we took on a challenge that we knew was going to be hard, but we also knew or felt that we were getting a jump start on. Getting, you know, Lowry and Zach in that deal, Chris Dunn, getting Wendell, that pick out of that situation. The fact that had we been healthy this year, we probably wouldn't be sitting here with a – you know, an opportunity like we're going to have in the lottery. So, yeah, we undertook something that was difficult, but we knew it going in. And I believe that we are on the right track. So much of it is leadership, and Jim has accepted that. He said to these group of guys that he's going to lead them. He's going to show them the right way. He's going to be truthful with them. He's going to coach them the way that he feels they need to be coached. And I'll find out a lot. I think I already have found a lot about some of these guys and how they react to coaching. And there's always, you know, chirping out there where, you know, people think a guy is a certain way, but, you know, people don't have the luxury that I have where you can sit in there and watch him do his work every day on the practice floor and how he does support and encourage all the while making sure that they are held to a standard. And that's important. That's to me is basketball. That's coaching.
Yeah. Okay. But here's the thing. If you're getting the same results you had with the previous coach, then what good is it? That's the whole thing. An opportunity to win the ball game, and the Bulls fell short again. I mean, there's some games here, as we've documented, that the Bulls should have been able to win, and they did not. We can go up and down the line of the New York game, the two Golden State games. These are games that the Bulls should have been able to win, and they did not. Some thoughts from Jim Boylan, the head coach for the Bulls, as the Bulls lose against the Raptors at the United Center.
I love the way we played the last two nights. Disappointed like the team is in the finish of the game, but I like the way we played. I like the way we battled. Oh, I love the 30 assists. I thought the difference in the game was the boards. I thought, you know, we were down three at halftime on the defensive board, and then second half I thought that hurts us. It hurts us when we don't get rebounds and we don't get stops. It leads to free throws, leads to extra possessions. That being said, our defense was really solid again and you know, kept us in the game through some of the droughts we had. So we're gonna keep pounding the rock and keep playing hard and working at it. And I'm confident we'll break through. But this one stings. It stings, just like last night. So, any questions, I'll take them.
I know your main focus and concern is the team and getting the team better, but as coach of this team, how concerned do you start getting that this fan base is just going to start not believing in what this team was supposed to be and is? I mean, when you look in the stands tonight, there's a lot of red seats, and it just seems like people are becoming numb to this product.
I don't know. I can't speak for everybody or the fans. I get a lot of positive feedback about our group. I think people understand what we're trying to build. It's disappointing when we don't win games. It's disappointing when we don't win home games. Nobody's running from that. This team is playing hard, and they're competing, and they're learning, and they're growing. So I think people can see that too. And I love the way our defense has grown since the opening five games. And I thought we had a lot of really good looks tonight that we can make. I felt that way. First half, I thought we had open looks that we can make. And the ball was popping. Ball was moving. Those are the things I look at. Are they good shots? Are they open shots? Is the ball moving? How many times this year have we had 30 assists? I'm not sure. Do you guys know? I'm not sure. So we talked about getting 35. That's kind of our goal, is to get 35. We got 30. So I'm not going to let those things deter me from understanding who we are and what we're trying to do and what we're building. I'm not. I can't control those things. I'm not doing it.
This time Zach went to the hole as opposed to the other night where he took the three. What did you want to see from him on that possession?
Yeah, just be aggressive. Put the ball in his hands. We trust him with it.
Did you have any problem with him going through the double team? Or are you
trying to get fouled, trying to get something good going to the rim? It's a shot he can make. You know, we trust him with the ball in his hands. He's delivered before, and we'll trust him again. So these games, people focus on the last play. I don't think you can do that. I can't do that. I have to focus on the game and where we could have played better and built the lead to 10 or 12 or 14. And now it's a different game at the end. So we learn in those last moments, but we got to learn throughout the game, too.
So broadening it out, you went to the starters again. And I feel like we ask you this a lot. The starters come in with an eight-point lead, and they don't close the deal again. Yeah. How frustrating is that for you as a coach to go to the move that most coaches would make in that moment,
The starters in? My subs were tired. You know, we were on a back-to-back. My subs were tired. And, you know, there's always a discussion on who we should leave in and who we should take out. And when guys are fatigued, they made their run. And the starter's job is to come back in, get reengaged in the game, and close it out. That's what they did. That's what they did. They brought their guys in, and they closed the game out. We have to learn to do that. That's the growth plate. That's what we're close. We're right there. That's the next step.
Jim Boylan.
Alan Lamont on ESPN 1000. Hello, Al.
Hey, Jay Hood. I feel like this is a daily call to you. You're my therapist for the Bulls. Two things that he said that irks me, as usual. One, he's talked about there. He likes the growth of the team. I'm going to be honest with you. I haven't watched them. I don't see any development in anybody other than Wendell. And the other thing is I talked about, you know, the question was about the fans in the stands, and he's telling me he's getting a lot of good feedback. From who? I know I'm not. Have you called him and given some good feedback?
No, I'm not.
I mean, let's be honest here. What are we doing? It's a daily issue, and nothing's going to change. I keep saying that. Every time I call you, I say, we're the idiots that go to the game. I just went to this stupid game and wasted my money, wasted my time. Why? Because my kids like to go see players, so I don't know what else to do.
As long as your kids like it, that's fine. If they like Betty the Bull and the popcorn trick, that's fine. We got to go, don't we? Oh man.
Oh, jeez.
We'll put on Twitter, twitter.com, tweet Jay Hood, at ESPN1000, our petty choices of the sports weekend. We have to go. I can't believe we got to go. I got another hour in me on this Bulls thing. Tomorrow, 8:30 to 10 after Notre Dame basketball. We'll talk more about the Bulls and everything else. Sean Davis on the other side of the glass. We thank you for listening. Thanks to Jesse and Mark Tauscher and Howard Griffith. Thanks for listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Jonathan
Hood. Unbelievable.
I'm so hood.
Growth plate
on ESPN 1000.
Team sucks.